My damned best, at least.
With that, he briskly made his way to the entryway. Hadrian! It was Samantha, having stood to come after him. He held up a hand with a shake of his head, and then continued on. Right now, he needed to be alone. Chapter 17. Entano Fos Prime. The dinner had concluded soon after Hadrian's departure, leaving Napalm, Samantha, Karma, and Dex to return to their rooms. Instead, they meandered over to the palace courtyard, where Samantha found an edge of a fountain to walk along. She balanced, looking at the odd fountain of a woman that resembled Orlean, but was much older. Then her mind returned to Hadrian. "Is he known to lose his temper?" she asked. Napalm, likely the one who knew him best, considered this.
"I've never seen it. What we witnessed in there was him leaving to think, I'd say. Losing his temper, at least by my definition, would have meant shouting and at least one explosion."
Samantha laughed as she jumped down from the fountain. "Okay, not to that extreme, but he's definitely off right now." The others shared a confused look. "I mean, he's distracted. His mind has too much going on."
"Ah," Karma said, then shook her head. "But maybe you should have told him about the boy right away. I mean, when you first met the boy in the simulation."
"The simulation that wasn't a simulation, you mean?" Samantha asked. "First, there wasn't an opportunity. Second, maybe he could have filled us in more to begin with. Then I would have had more reason to think the boy was something worth mentioning."
"The boy who was a man,"
Napalm noted thoughtfully.
"What do you think he was trying to get out of Sam?"
Quan made a grunt, then motioned to Sam, still in her semi-revealing robes.
"It was a simulation," she shot back, then frowned.
"Oh, no. Gross." Karma laughed. "Not the best way to get into a girl's pants, though, is it? I mean, arranging a meet-cute in the middle of a battle-ridden territory?"
"Intel, more likely,"
Quan agreed.
"But maybe also."
"Okay, Quan," Sam spat back. "How about you stick to the whole mysterious and quiet type thing you usually have going on? I don't know if I like what you have to say when you do talk." He smiled with a shrug.
"Right."
Napalm waited to see if anyone else was going to add something, then said,
"So, let's go with Intel, a booty call as a potential added bonus."
At a glare from Samantha, he added, "Or not, maybe not. So he had some sort of scanner or sensor that showed someone had jumped in."
"And wanted to find out who you were with, most likely."
Karma finished the thought. Dex made soothing sounds, and Karma nodded.
"Dex says the boy was likely trying to figure out what sort of team you had and who you were working for. The basics."
After a long stare as she bit her lip, Karma shook her head.
"But of course you didn't tell him any of that, right?"
Samantha frowned, scrunching her nose in thought.
"I don't think so."
"Okay, well, a note for future interactions with strangers, even those we meet in simulations. Keep all information locked away deep down inside your cute little heart. Got it?"
"For your information, I have my shit together,"
Sam said, staring at each of them as if daring them to contradict her. "Back home, I'm one of the main resistance warriors now, part of the last remaining resistance, Earth's last stand against the Syndicate." Karma leaned up against a nearby pillar, Napalm sitting on the fountain.
"We have to stick together, no bickering,"
Napalm said, staring up into the stars.
"If we're going to be going up there and putting our lives on the line to save the universe, We need something they can call us when they sing our praises. We need a team name.
I thought we were Black Ops, Karma argued. Meaning, not a lot of people will know what we've done, let alone sing about it.
Still, it's a good idea,
Quan chimed in. Samantha nodded, already racking her brain for something.
Team Flames?
Napalm offered. Karma scoffed. No. Team Hadrian? Two on the nose, Samantha countered. And you were the one who said we didn't want to be going around telling everyone who we worked for and with.
True.
Karma pursed her lips in thought.
Shadow Corps,
Samantha said. The others froze, considering that. Then each started to nod and murmur agreement.
Technically,
Quan argued, holding up a hand.
A corps is two battalions or more, at least our definition. But I love it.
And who knows how big we'll grow eventually,
Karma countered. After Hadrian's gotten us all trained up and we've proven ourselves. Samantha smiled.
I thought of Shadow Force, too, which was cool, but reminded me too much of a video game, Shining Force.
Huh. Quan actually laughed. I can't believe you know that game. Damn, I loved that game. Playing it on this hacked computer I found. Didn't think anyone else had access to games so old these days.
So, how'd you wind up here? Samantha asked.
Quan looked around at them all.
Me? Nothing special. Became a rock marine to prove I was the best when my friend decided to join. Didn't want him to think he was the better of us. When he gave his life to save me in the first syndicate attack, I guess he proved he was. Now I fight, hoping he's watching.
Quan eyed Samantha.
And what about you?
Damn. Samantha sucked in a gulp of air and said, you all wouldn't believe half the shit that makes up my life.
Try us, Karma said.
You first, Samantha countered.
Karma shrugged.
You all know my story, I think, but yeah, there's more to it. One of the top fighters back home, they promoted me up the ranks of our military. Then it got political, and they made me the equivalent of an Earth general. I learned what the Civil War was all about. A family squabble had started it. Nothing more. When Hadrian came calling, I was glad to raise my hand and volunteer to get the hell out of there.
But you often talk about getting back to join the fight. Karma bit her lip, then nodded.
It's tough. I know my girls are back there taking shots, but it all feels so pointless now. So stupid. This here is a war I know is worth fighting, but I still can't completely abandon my people.
It's not stupid,
Quan said. Napalm nodded.
Agreed.
Karma waved them off.
Whatever. I didn't share to get all of you on my side. I shared so this one would open up.
Samantha held up her hands in surrender.
Okay. The invasion came when I was only 13, but we'd received notice it would happen when I was 11. Can you imagine 2 years of preteen life knowing an alien force was about to invade your world? It made everything different. You want to play a video game where you're shooting bad guys? Suddenly, every shot feels real. Every NPC saved is a neighbor or the old lady you see every day at the corner market. It changed me. Made me grow up real fast. Then there was the actual invasion, when I was separated from everyone I knew and loved. My mom was already off fighting with the Marines. My dad, well, the most I've ever heard about him was that he was some jack-off Marine who got my mom pregnant and then ditched her. So there I was, left to fend for myself. She sighed, glancing around at them all, sure they didn't want to hear this.
but the intrigued expressions on their faces said otherwise, so she continued. Long story shorter, I ended up reconnecting with my mom, and we actually ended up fighting side by side for a bit. Now, here's the crazy part. Last time I saw her, I was saving her and some others with the powers Hadrian gave me. It was also the last time I used those powers, until recently. I had started to think I had imagined them.
I'm damn glad that's not the case,
Napalm said with a smile.
And your mom? What happened to her?
Samantha sighed. They must have thought I was dead. That's what I hear, anyway. They told me she went after a ship that had the ability to time travel. She probably thought there'd be a way to get me back.
Do you know where she is now?
Karma asked, leaning in and eyes wide. With a shrug, Samantha said, I know she's gone, and that's it. I know that Earth is still fighting for its survival, and as much as I'm not sure about Hadrian's complete story, I know that being up here with you all, part of the Shadow Corps... She smiled at this and earned a couple of chuckles. Well, I can't think of any better way to serve, any better way to make my mom's sacrifice worth it, if there was a sacrifice.
Damn,
Napalm said. And you? Samantha asked him.
Me?
He frowned, looking at the sky.
Shit, now you all make me wish I had some exciting story. I'm a simple one. Hadrian came to me a long time ago to learn from me, so I could show him how to use my powers with energy. Then he taught them to his people with my permission. Now he says he needs me to fight the terrors that hide in the shadows of the universe, so I'm here. Simple.
Okay, tough guy, Karma said with a roll of her eyes. Let's see what kind of story you share with us when you've had a few shots of the spirits in you. Napalm laughed.
Deal.
They all turned to Dex now, who stood in the corner with his robes moving about like slithering snakes. For a long moment, the being didn't make a sound, then slowly reached up and pulled off the hood. Samantha could feel her breath stop in anticipation, but what she saw was a face not unlike those she had known back home. Its eyes were pure black, and its skin smooth like porcelain, but otherwise it could have passed for human. This is me, Dex said in a smooth, pleasant voice. You have opened up, so I do the same. I have seen the errors of my people, the evil they have done in the name of the great deceivers. If there is any doubt in Hadria, let me tell you now that such doubt is misguided, wrong. He will lead us to victory, and I will be there the whole way, until my final breath, should it come to that.
You talk,
Samantha stated the obvious. Dex bowed slightly.
For me to remove my hood is on a similar level to you removing your clothes. But I figured, this one time, I can show you that I am a part of this Shadow Corps, that I mean to be at your side, always having your backs. You can count on me.
The black eyes flickered a quick flash of silver light, and then Dex bowed even further, exposing a bald head.
If you all agree I have shown this, I would very much like to put my hood back on now.
They all murmured their agreement, and Dex pulled up the hood so that its face was once again shadowed.
Thank you for that.
Samantha felt an emotional ball welling up in her throat. Loyalty had always meant a lot to her, and if Dex was truthful about what it meant to remove its hood, she wouldn't ignore the gesture.
I mean, we don't all have to expose ourselves now, do we?
Napalm said with a grin that was clearly directed at Karma. She raised an eyebrow and said,
Someone get me my sword, in case Napalm does. I'll cut it off right here.
Whoa, a joke.
Me too.
Maybe.
At that, he chuckled, but it was a nervous one. Out of a need to change the subject, but also curiosity, Samantha asked, "And Hadrian? Did he really lose everyone?" They were silent for several minutes. As the water from the fountain trickled down behind her, Samantha grew uncomfortable. "Nobody here knows, or we're not supposed to talk about it?"
"I have bits of information," Karma said. "Nothing concrete, and maybe it's a story best left for Hadrian to tell when he's ready. But yes, from what I could piece together, his planet was hit. Even with their ability to look into the future, and with the powers they have, it wasn't enough. This enemy we're up against, it's the real deal."
"Well, they haven't met the Shadow Corps yet, have they?" Samantha said. "I, for one, mean to put them in their place. I imagine that will be at the end of my sword, breathing their last breath."
"Damn straight," Napalm said. "Oorah,"
Quan muttered. Then the rest of them joined in one loud,
"Oorah!"
Hadrian roamed the great arched halls of this castle they would have him call home. This planet wasn't his, though, and never would be. After what the great deceivers had done to his people, and what they planned to do to the universe, he didn't see how he could ever really belong anywhere but out fighting against them. How many of the elders truly believed in the fight the way he did? Some of his people in the early days had bought into the lies, calling his enemy the Great Ones or the Old Gods. The idea that anyone could think of them as gods caused Hadrian's blood to boil. They looked at the universe like the Buddhists did their sand mandalas, and it was time to sweep aside the sand, to destroy it all. Their message was simple. Destruction was part of the process as much as creation. Everything was temporary, nothing permanent. Nothing, that is, but them and their allies. He came to a point where tall pillars gleamed in the purple light of the sun. The wall along this walkway had been engraved with images depicting battles over the years. They showed spaceships shooting each other down, great cities sinking into oblivion, and species of various aliens struggling to avoid destruction. It didn't matter what species one was, simple acceptance of destruction of self and those you love was not natural. Fighting for freedom and justice was. Fighting for that last breath was. And fighting for your loved ones certainly was. He stopped at the point in the wall where he had often stood before, contemplating, when on this planet. It was a newer etching, describing the fall of his people. There, in its center, at the base of the dome of Hierakon, was his Neraldian in all her splendor. Her hair trailed out behind her, arms spread up with hands out as if to push back the invasion that had taken her life. Hadrian would give anything to go back to that moment and change it all, to somehow die in her stead, or save them all if there had been a way. But time had its rules. It could be bent, manipulated to degrees, but never completely controlled. For all he knew, going back could result in the destruction of the entire defensive alliance. His thoughts turned to Karstrak, who he had also thought long dead. How could it be that the man had survived? That he was out there, giving access to the enemy through the gates? On an evening like this, Karstrak had taken Hadrian aside on that first day of his coming-of-age training and told him he would look out for him. He had been there when Hadrian and Neraldian met, even been the one to give each of them the gentle nudge they needed to end up together. The first day of the invasion by the great deceivers, it had been Karstrak who had run to them and given them the warning that could have saved both their lives, but only saved Hadrian's. For so long now, he had been convinced he was the last of his kind. What else was he wrong about? So many relied on him, trusted in him. But as he stared at the engraving, he felt that he knew nothing. None of them did. But that didn't mean he would stop fighting for what he believed. Knowledge was the ultimate reward, but belief the ultimate motivator. Belief that they were in the right, that living was the correct path over destruction, and belief that Karstrak, a warrior who had once been like a brother to him, needed to be confronted. If he had betrayed them all, then he would face justice. Finger tracing the outline of his lover's hair on the wall, he closed his eyes, breathed a deep breath, and then steeled his emotions. It was time. Chapter 18. Antano Foss Prime, Flight to Space. The team began boarding Hadrian's ship, and Samantha paused as the others passed, looking back out at the rolling hills. The hills weren't so different from images she had seen of the California coast, aside from the strange vegetation and brilliance of colors. Whatever journey they were about to find themselves on, Samantha knew she would think back to her time here and remember one moment of peace, one calm before the storm. The Elder's intelligence operatives had briefed them that there had once been a jump in the portion of the universe known as the Black Stars, so named because no light made it this far. But the jump was gone. They couldn't find it anymore, so Hadrian's team would go in through the closest gate and make their way over. A neutral planet nearby could show them the way, an old outpost still manned by a tribe of Kolak who had broken off from the rest of their species and sworn off the mercenary ways.
Ferder and your new friends are escorting us to this Kolak outpost. Then we'll be joined by two Kolak ships before flying into the Black Stars.
Hadrian briefed them all from the mess hall of the Neraldian.
Our mission,
he continued,
is to take out the target, set up a new jump point, and then get the hell out.
And the dragon things we saw out there? Samantha asked.
That's where the Alliance comes in,
Hadrian replied with a raise of his eyebrow.
We take out the main threats, they move in and clean up our leftovers.
He calls three space dragons leftovers,
Napalm noted with a bark of a laugh.
Classic.
Well, that and the fact that the six of us won't really be able to do much more than slow them down. We'll need a whole army to send them away.
Not kill them? Samantha asked with a frown. Hadrian turned to her with an amused gaze.
That would be quite impossible, Sam. Though if we find a way, please, let's kill them.
Samantha chuckled. Challenge accepted. The Neraldian flew out first, pressing into space and making 10 gravities of flight feel like a river cruise. They were followed by their escort, two A-fighters, named for their style of fighting that was often more similar to incoming asteroids than jet fighters. As Napalm understood it, the fighters would slip in toward their opponents and dump charges into space around them. Then they would fly out with a series of reverse shots that would hit the targets and send their enemies into a barrage of explosions. They were able to see it in action on the second day of the journey. The announcement of rogue fighters incoming sounded while they were eating breakfast. Napalm pointed Samantha to the windows of the mess hall.
You want to see this?
He said, hoping the Neraldian's lasers and turrets didn't take out all of the attacking ships.
Are they with our enemy? Samantha asked. I mean, how'd they intercept us so fast?
He shook his head.
They might not be, not specifically. The war in these parts is strong, but there are still bandits, pirates, and bounty hunters. Considering our ship and who we have on board, I wouldn't be surprised at any of those likelihoods.
She glanced up, wanting more of an explanation. But Napalm smiled and ignored her silent question, eyes following the action as the A-fighters charged in.
Here we go.
A series of explosions and bright flashes of light, and they were flying past the space debris of their would-be assailants.
Well, that was a pretty show, but not exactly eventful,
Napalm stated, a bit let down.
You wanted our lives at risk?
A voice said from behind, and he turned to see that Hadrian had joined them. Lately he had taken to appearing as the disfigured old man. He had the others in tow and motioned to a round table in the center of the dining hall. Everyone moved to join him, and he sat. For a long moment he stared down at the table, lost in thought.
Boss?
Karma broke the silence. Hadrian glanced up at them all, his good eye roaming across their faces.
What you saw just now was a simple display of our power. We have, in addition to our defensive turrets and 3 mounted lasers, approximately 500 megaton fusion warheads on board, 100 antimatter warheads, and of course the special skills you've seen in Napalm, Samantha, and myself. If anyone wants to take us down, it's going to be a tough battle on their part. Then you add our escorts to the mix, and I'd say the enemy would have to send several military-grade destroyers our way if they even wanted to stand a chance.
He scrunched his nose in thought.
Or one of those space dragons. Which we left in our dust, no?
Napalm asked.
For the time being, it's not a concern. However, if Karstrak is behind them, as I suspect he is, and if he thinks we're moving in on him, I wouldn't be surprised if we get a chance to butt heads with one again soon.
I get my chance to take one down, you mean?
Samantha leaned back, her sleek body armor giving her the appearance of a much older warrior, despite her youthful face.
You all doubt me, but I'm slaying me a dragon.
Hadrian almost smiled at that, but instead just nodded.
For all of our sakes, let's hope you do. As of this moment, we are essentially members of the Alliance, an elite team meant to pull off missions such as this.
Napalm leaned in.
We already chose a name, boss. You did?
Hadrian raised an eyebrow, impressed.
Well, don't keep me in suspense.
Everyone looked to Samantha, since she had been the one to come up with it.
The Shadow Corps, she said, hopeful.
Silence followed, broken by a laugh from Hadrian.
It's perfect. And who will be leading this Shadow Corps?
At this, everyone looked around, confused.
Is that not you?
Quan asked.
I'll do what I can,
he replied.
But as the fight expands, I'll be needed elsewhere. Consider me the general assigned to this endeavor, but the type of general who runs out at the front of the troops from time to time, leading the charge. We still need to establish chain of command, for once we're on the ground, I can't have everyone just doing whatever the hell they please. That'd be chaos, and won't work once we come across a cohesive enemy unit.
A sound came from Dex, and both Karma and Hadrian considered, then turned to Samantha.
Dex votes for you,
Hadrian said. Napalm frowned, confused by this, then nodded.
Actually, that's not a bad idea. The rest of us have our egos to get in the way.
I don't have an ego? Samantha asked with a laugh. Come on, every one of you is 50 times more experienced than I am.
Which means they have habits, ways of fighting their own wars that might not be the best when we come across this enemy.
Quan nodded.
Agreed. If I'm answering to Red Company as well, I don't want split considerations judging every command I might make, and seeing what you can do.
He turned to Samantha, eyes full of respect.
You can count on me to follow you into battle.
It was clear she was overwhelmed, but to her credit she sat straight, doing her best to not show it. With a lick of her lips, she looked to Karma and then back to Dex.
You all are sure?
Dex bowed, almost a nod.
I'm here to do what's best for the team, Karma replied. Not to feed my ego. So yeah, screw it. I'm yours, O Capitan.
Technically,
Hadrian interrupted,
you all are somewhere between a squad and a fire team, with the difference here being that each of you are essentially equals. We'll have Sam calling shots, but you all have your unique experience. I know you better than to think that I have to tell you to speak up if you see a problem, and I know that some of you are already mentoring Sam here, in a way. So keep up the good work. Keep training. We will run into more trouble, and we can't afford to have any of you injured or worse. So that's your first order from me. Don't get hit. Got it?
They all nodded, and he smiled.
Well then, get back to training, you slackers. What are you all sitting around staring at my pretty mug for?
A chuckle went around the table, but then he stopped smiling.
Seriously, get back to work.
While jump gates had been scarce after leaving Earth, going to their new destination wasn't a problem at all.
Think of it like a game, where the more gates you use, the more they can track us,
Napalm said, doing his best to explain it to Samantha as they moved through the obstacle courses.
At least, as long as Karstrak lives.
So we can be tracked using the gates?
Samantha asked, as she ducked under several rotating bags of sand that simulated strikes, then came up and delivered two quick jabs and a right hook to the targets that appeared. He nodded.
But not anyone can just use the gates, right?
If one of Hadrian's people, like Karstrak, is close enough to sense a gate being used, the gate enters into his consciousness. Then he and anyone he wills can locate the gate and use it.
She paused, turning to look at him.
That's messed up. So having another Hadrian out there...
Not a good thing, in this case,
Napalm said, coming up behind her. His eyes went wide and he said,
Look out! Whap!
Too late, as one of the sandbags swung down and smacked her on the head. This time, when she turned to hit it, she was pissed. Her strike burst the bag open and sent sand everywhere.
Nice going, kid,
Napalm said with a chuckle, then wiped sweat from his brow as he exited the obstacle course.
I'm hitting the showers while you clean this up. Meet for dinner?
She groaned, glancing around for a broom.
Yeah, sure.
A sucking sound came from the floor. She glanced down to see a section of the wall had detached and floated over, then sucked up the sand. It then floated back to the wall and reattached so tightly she couldn't even see the seams. She made a note to remember to ask Hadrian where she could get one of those for herself, if she ever had a home again outside of this spaceship. She walked over to the wall of swords and lifted hers, smiling at the feel of it in her hands again. As much as she had once been against the idea of swords, it felt like a part of her now. It was too bad Hadrian had put a hold on grinding for upgrades. She wanted to be ready when they arrived at their destination, but he said it was too risky with Karstrak out there. While that didn't make sense to her yet, she had to trust that he had his reasons and would let her know soon enough. So she was stuck performing katas that Dex had been kind enough to show her. There was no way she could ever hope to have his skill level, but as she turned and thrust, parried and lunged, twisting the blade and then striking upward, she knew her form was damn good. From everything she had gathered from picking the brains of Napalm and the others, their mission was to get in there, deal with Karstrak to block the jumps for the bad guys, and then reestablish a jump for the good guys. That would be easy enough, except for the fact that they had to travel through what Karma had called the universe's butthole to get there. "The what?" Samantha had asked. Karma had laughed. "The only jump to where the prisoner said Karstrak would be is through a specific jump point, set up purposefully by him deep within the planet Dex comes from. I hear his relatives are real friendly," Samantha said sarcastically. What she had heard was, in fact, the opposite. "Don't joke about them," Karma replied. "You're not going to feel so jovial once you have to face them in battle." Samantha had nodded and excused herself. She had seen Dex in action, and certainly didn't want to ever have to face anyone like it. That was their destination, the butthole of the universe. Great. Instead of heading to the showers, she stuck around for a bit. It wasn't like she wanted to use them while Napalm was there anyway. Although the ship had separate showers, they were still in the same room, just separated by stalls. That, and she didn't fully trust the water filtration system that filtered it between uses, so she wanted to give it as much time as possible. No matter how many times Hadrian told her how it actually worked, she couldn't quite accept it. Having been through her share of crappy bathing situations on Earth, ranging from communal showers to canteen showers, or, as she'd been forced to do one time, a sand shower, this was like living the high life. So, when she had the chance, she rather enjoyed being picky. As she made her next sword thrust, she noticed a figure out of the corner of her eye. She made sure to end the form in a graceful bow to an imaginary enemy, then turned to see who it was. To her surprise, it was the pilot, Jackal. He had his helmet at his side, and for the first time she got a good glimpse of his face. To her surprise, he appeared in every way to be a human. His nose was slightly longer and more hooked than most men she knew, but other than that, he looked like a lanky version of Goose from Top Gun. One of the LRR fighters had plastered his room with old Top Gun images he'd found in a magazine, and had been obsessed with Goose. The guy had a major crush on a figure who had lived some 50 years before. It was creepy, but also a little cute.
"I'm sorry for staring," she said, blushing when she realized that she hadn't pulled her eyes away, nor said anything for an uncomfortable amount of time. "It's just, are you from Earth?"
He nodded.
"My government asked for volunteers without telling us what it was, but the moment I got up here and met Hadrian, I swore to never leave his side if he'd have me."
She pursed her lips, frowning.
"Ah, you thought you were the only one,"
he said with a smile.
"Hey, you're not the only human, but you are special. I've heard Hadrian go on about you. I've seen what you can do. Don't you doubt that for a minute."
"Thanks," she said, putting the sword back on the wall. "You're from..."
"From Australia, though the accent's long gone. It happens up here."
He smiled, then his voice took on a distinct Australian twang.
"We start to forget who we are, mate."
"You're off duty, I take it?"
"Even when we have to take shifts, you know. Make sure we get some sleep so we don't crash this thing into a meteor storm or something."
Samantha gulped nervously at the thought of that. He turned to go, but seemed to want to say something to her and paused.
You know, the answer is yes.
What's that?
Is it all real? Yes, it is.
He smiled and gave her a friendly wave.
I asked myself that every night for the better part of a year when I first came out here. The sooner you realize you can stop pinching yourself, the better.
She laughed.
Good night, Jackal.
He winked.
Jack works when I'm not behind the captain's seat.
Night, Jack.
When he was gone, she wasn't in the mood to train anymore. And it was getting late, at least according to her body's internal clock. As she was walking toward the showers, she passed the mess hall and saw Hadrian and a very tired-looking Jackal talking. She caught a portion of Jackal saying,
"You have to tell her."
Then, when they both noticed her, they stopped talking and walked off. That was odd. Ignoring it for now, she made her way to the shower, got cleaned up, and went back to her room. She took one of the pairs of pajamas prepared for her, slipped into them, and lay down. Jackal's words came back to her. What was it they weren't telling her? While they could have been talking about karma, they had acted pretty strange when they saw Samantha, so that part wasn't hard to figure out. If it was something to do with her being younger, she swore she'd kick both of their asses when she woke up. For now, though, her eyelids grew heavy, and she found herself drifting off to sleep. Chapter 19. The Neutral Zone. Napalm was the first of the team to wake. He wandered into the bridge, saw that Hadrian wasn't there, and was about to leave when Jackal entered and took his seat, replacing the alternate shift. With a smile to Napalm, he said,
"You see where we are?"
He motioned for the screen to zoom in, revealing a cluster of planets with ships moving between them. What had appeared to be just more stars and planets was actually a hub of activity.
"Our last stop before entering enemy territory,"
Jackal commented. He pointed to the screen, then moved his finger so that it zoomed in on the closest planet, showing an area of metallic gray that could only be a city.
"The Neutral Zone." "I've been there before,"
Napalm stated, throat dry.
"Can't say I have the fondest memories."
Jackal turned, considering him, but returned to piloting when Napalm didn't offer anything more.
"We might have time to throw back some of the famed devil's wine,"
Jackal said.
"As I hear, the stuff opens you right up. My treat, of course."
Napalm eyed the man, wondering if there was any way he had heard the story. It hadn't been so long ago when a woman had lured him here with promises of a life together in the Outlands. He had nearly given up on being a soldier, was fed up with death and destruction. Then a night of heavy drinking from the Devil's Teat, as the locals called it, and he woke up the next morning nude in an alley, all of his chips gone, both physical and the ones accessed through his account. Luckily for him, the Brothers in Flames put him back on his feet, but not before he had to obtain clothes and find his way back home. He only escaped a life of servitude because Hadrian came calling. He had been a sight for sore eyes, and Napalm would never forget the relief he felt at seeing that man's face again. So would he partake in the devil's wine? Hell no. But to Jackal, he just smiled and nodded.
"Sure, we'll try to work something out."
Politely excusing himself, Napalm made for the training rooms. He hadn't realized they would be stopping by this planet, and it sent his stomach turning. If anyone tried anything with him this time, he meant to be ready. Samantha joined the rest of the Shadow Corps as they strapped in at the back seats of the bridge and pulled into land. A mean-looking Akame had hailed them and briefed Hadrian on landing fees and procedures, But all of that went over Samantha's head. The Akame, Napalm told her, was a race that occupied much of this outer edge of space. They had very humanoid features, if one could ignore the lines of three stones that went down the middle of their foreheads. Napalm insisted the stones were actually part of their skulls, and that they couldn't be removed. Many were the size of small pebbles, but he told her some grew quite large, so that when you said, "That man has some stones on him," the phrase actually was literal. But what fascinated her the most was how, according to Napalm, some had a stone at the top that extended out into a bit of a horn. He and others had termed this type the unicorns, though never to their faces unless they wanted a fight. Now she was anxious to get on planet in hopes of seeing a unicorn, though she wasn't sure if the sight would excite her or give her nightmares. They touched down at the boarding station, then took transport ships to the city. The Akame had said something about not having enough room to land all the ships directly on planet, but Karma said she suspected it was a way of monitoring who came and went, and being able to stop anyone from making a quick getaway. Furter and Olive were waiting for them at the other end when they arrived. Samantha smiled and waved, then took a moment to look around at the great reception hall. It was old, and it looked like it was made of brown plaster, and reminded her of a train terminal she and the other LRR members had spent a week hiding in after a particularly bad skirmish with the Syndicate.
"You see the way we dealt with those pirate pieces of shit?"
Furter asked, beaming as he walked up and clasped forearms with her. A look of concern came over him.
Did that translate properly?
She laughed, then turned to nod at Olive.
Yeah, why?
His cheeks turned purple, which she imagined was his version of blushing.
I looked up more of the details behind our last communication.
I didn't know we were referring to the man in a phallic way.
Olive grunted, then said,
"Is there any other way to think of males?"
Samantha wasn't sure which way to go in this discussion, so she smiled and walked past them, admiring a carving on the wall over a metallic tube that seemed to be the tunnel out. The carving was of a group of the Akame, riding giant bird-like creatures, a ball with lines coming out of it.
"Just ignore stuff like that,"
Furter said, joining her after greeting the rest of her group.
"The Akame have such high thoughts of themselves."
"I actually don't know what it is," she admitted.
"Oh?"
He looked taken aback.
"I keep forgetting how little Earthers know about life out here. Akame believe they created the universe. They have this old tale about being born from the eggs of Dactites, those flying things, but born into nothingness. They took flight, going so fast they created a burst of energy that exploded through time and space, creating everything we have now."
Samantha frowned in confusion. She had heard some whoppers in her day, but this just made her head hurt.
"Huh, sounds like the Chinese,"
Quan said, laughing.
"You mention anything, they say they invented it."
"I bet the Chinese would say the same thing about Koreans,"
Olive said, earning her a nod from Quan.
"Yes, but in the Koreans' case, it's usually true."
The others laughed, but stopped as soon as it was clear Quan wasn't joking.
"I don't get it,"
Samantha said, shaking her head.
"Seriously? Giant birds?"
Furter laughed.
"Don't mock their beliefs when they're around, or you'll find yourself on dueling ground."
"In and out,"
Hadrian said, walking up behind them. Furter and Olive quickly bowed low, and Hadrian nodded their way.
"We're here to pick up our guides, the only ones I know who have been through Zeus's mouth. That's where our source says we can find our target."
"Zeus's mouth?"
Samantha asked, this being the first time she'd heard of it.
It goes by several names,
Karma said with a playful grin.
He means the butthole of the universe.
Yes, some call it that,
Hadrian replied, shaking his head.
Usually those without class.
Ouch!
Napalm said with a laugh.
Shut up, she told him. You've called it that as many times as I have.
He held up a finger.
Ah, but never in front of the general.
You kids play nice,
Hadrian said, glancing around. He turned to Furter.
Where are the others?
Furter looked ashamed as he said,
Went off to sample the devil's wine, I'm sorry to say. I warned them.
Hadrian sighed.
You all find them and get them ready to go. Sam, you're with me. Partially in case there's trouble, I could use your help. And partially because you don't need to see the underside of this corpse of a city.
As intriguing as you make this place sound,
she nodded.
Deal.
They made their way down and parted ways with the others, and soon found themselves walking along dark corridors. This planet was the exact opposite of the last one they had been on. While the elders lived in light and color, this place was all browns, grays, and rust. As far as she could see was city, multiple layers of city, all of it covered with ships coming and going. A whole universe was at work outside of Earth's knowledge. How odd that humans had thought for so long that they were alone in the universe. But someone had to have known. The Syndicate invasion had certainly tipped everyone off, but they must have known before. There was the Red Company made up of Rock Marines and others like Jackal from Australia. Frowning at the thought, she asked,
Hadrian, has the U.S. ever sent people up here? I mean, were they at least aware of all this?
Hadrian glanced over, lost in thought, but then nodded.
Certain presidents were more accepting than others. Eventually, an arm of the government, a constant arm not affected by politics, decided presidents would only be briefed on a need-to-know basis. Plausible deniability, they call it. We have a SEAL team up here, actually. They call it SEAL Team Zero, on account of it officially not existing.
And the work of them, or Red Company? How's that different from what we'll be doing?
He smiled.
They'll be fighting in a much more conventional way.
You mean without this power stuff?
She licked the inside of her teeth, trying to think of how to say it.
Magic.
He nodded.
These suits you all have been given, they aren't easily made. The skills you have are special, and the missions we're going on, well, I'm hesitant to say they are any more or less important than the missions of those other groups, but they are of a much darker nature.
The thought of doing tasks of a darker nature than a group titled SEAL Team Zero made her stomach clench, but she also found pride in the idea. As they walked through the winding halls, merchants reached out to them with strange food, some of it looking like mutated bugs. Others had clothing and jewelry for sale. The architecture and layout, however, felt less like some outer space adventure and more like a scene from a horror movie. At any minute, she was sure all of the scaffolding, sheet metal, and pipes would come crashing down around her. Finally, they reached a long tunnel, with light at the end and the silhouettes of two men with rifles. Hadrian glanced around, motioning to what looked like the entryway to a bazaar not far down, at a fork in the road.
I want you to keep a lookout here.
He handed her a round metal disc, about the size of her thumbnail.
See if they have anything in the market that can be a treat for the ship. Only clean and safe, though. No taking chances in a place like this.
She looked at him skeptically, and he sighed.
Okay, fine. I'm just trying to get rid of you. These men in here, they're not the type to think bringing a teenage girl along is, well...
They'll think I'm for sale? Samantha said, catching on. Yuck.
Exactly, yuck. But as long as you look like you're doing the buying, not the selling, you'll be safe out here. Stay close, so we can leave as soon as I find our man.
She nodded, though she didn't like it. Her preference would be to go in with Hadrian and slap some alien jerks around. Watching his silhouette grow smaller as he went farther into the tunnel, she started to feel an anxiety she hadn't expected. She had no doubt she could take care of herself, but she'd never been alone on an alien planet, particularly one so unfamiliar and generally creepy. After Hadrian went inside, she lingered a moment longer. When a man came by with a half horn sticking up out of his forehead and eyed her up and down with a lecherous smile, she decided she would move on, as Hadrian had asked. She also decided she didn't give two shits about seeing a unicorn anymore. The man looked back, and she considered running over and tearing his horn right off of his face. But she decided starting problems like that wouldn't do anyone any good. Get onto the planet, find the guide their captured spy had told them would be able to lead the way to Zeus's mouth, and get moving ASAP. That was the mission, and she had been appointed a leader in this group. She would lead by example, turning and ignoring the pervert as she entered the market. It was even darker and scarier in here, surrounded by high metal walls, and the lanterns that provided the dim light swayed as if a ghost were rocking them. But she started to feel liberated as she moved along the corridors, realizing that everyone was simply worried about making a buck, or whatever the hell they used to pay down here. In a place like this back home, her focus would be on surviving the next syndicate attack, or worrying the person next door was actually a syndicate informant. The floor sloped down in places, uneven and slippery, so she had to watch her step. Two older men were laughing, playing some sort of game that involved rubies. Samantha watched for a moment, slightly surprised that nobody came by and tried to jack them. At a stall selling clothing, she studied a leather dress with a long tail, held together at the front by what looked like belt buckles. It reminded her of old pictures of pirates, and she considered buying it for a moment. But really, when would she wear it? The next stall over sold weapons, and she found collapsible batons that flared with electricity when extended.
"Careful there,"
the shopkeeper said, rushing over to take it from her. When he saw the lack of stones on her forehead, he froze, hand halfway extended.
"Oh, an earther, I see. What brings you here?"
"A girl's gotta get her shopping in," Samantha said, voice dripping with irritation at the way he spoke to her. "I'll take some of these." He frowned.
"They'll stun, but not kill."
"The other girls back home will love 'em."
Yes, fine.
He accepted the disc and ran it through a metallic device on his arm, then nodded and gave her a bag for the batons. She slung it over her shoulder and moved on. Cheering sounded in the distance, and she grew curious. As she approached the sound, the crowd grew thicker.
"You'll want to stay away from here,"
a woman said, eyeing her. She paused at the sight of Samantha's forehead, and then backed away. It was almost a disappointment to see that, at the center of the cheering crowd, the sight wasn't so different from back home. Two fighters were circling each other, hands up, ready to throw down. Never one to miss a fight, Samantha moved to higher ground. Here she could see that one of the fighters was an Akame woman with a horn longer than any of the others. A quick glance around the crowd showed that nobody else's stones projected like that.
Considering there were a lot of Akame in the crowd, Sam felt it was a good indicator of how rare this was. The crowd roared. Samantha's head spun back to see that the other one, a man twice her size but with simple stones, had just landed a punch and was now following up with an elbow to the woman's jaw. He advanced as the woman stumbled back, but then she recovered and came at him with a 1-2 punch to the gut and an uppercut to the jaw. The man nearly fell, then caught himself and ran in for a tackle. She ducked even lower, moving around him and catching him with her horn so that it tore into the flesh of his side. Blood spewed as she came up behind him. A mixture of boos and cheers rose from the crowd, and Samantha figured she had seen enough. Maybe this place wasn't so different from home after all. She had been wandering the stalls at least an hour, and began to think she had better hurry back to reconnect with Hadrian. If it was taking him this long, maybe he was in trouble. But no, not him. The thought was ridiculous. Laughter pulled at her attention and she hesitated, looking for the source. It sounded like... Yes, Karma was there, a few stalls over, drinking wine with two women. When one of the women held out a hand, Karma took it and began walking away with the women. As Sam watched, she saw a man with three large stones following Karma's small group. He had a look about him, carrying his long purple robes in a way that seemed out of place. She trailed along unobtrusively, and soon observed them entering a curtained room along a line of more curtains, decorated with intricate circular patterns of blue and purple. Nobody was watching, so Samantha crept forward carefully. She paused, preparing herself, when she heard a yelp. Her breaths came quick, and she decided to act. She darted forward and pulled the edge of the curtain back, reaching for her sword, and froze. Where she expected to find the three Akame robbing or hurting Karma, instead she found Karma on her back, completely nude with the two women on each side of her, also nude. The man had just started to remove his robes, and as Samantha stared, struck dumb with surprise, they fell to the floor. Knowing Karma, she should have expected this. Then Karma's eyes moved and met hers. For a moment, she smiled, almost as if she was about to laugh, only a flash of worry crossed her eyes, before vanishing into her mask of joy. Samantha ran. Oh, thank God the man hadn't turned around and scarred her mind for life, she thought, as she scrambled out of the market and back up the street. A strange warmth crept over her and made her inner thighs tingle, but she ignored it. She leaned against the wall, breathing, and closed her eyes. The bag of stun buttons pressed up against her, and she welcomed its comfort. All she could see was the image of those four, nude. "Damn it," she said, kicking the wall, and then heard a sound nearby. She leaped back, hand on her sword again, but it was just Hadrian approaching, two Akame women at his side. The women were petite, their stones small but glowing a brilliant royal blue.
"Damn it, as in you forgot to buy us anything?" Hadrian asked.
"Oh, no food." As she moved to reveal the bag, she did her best to smile at the two women, then nodded. "Hi, I'm Sam." The women introduced themselves as Thing One and Thing Two, then cracked up laughing. "Not your first interaction with humans?" Samantha asked, not thinking it was as funny as these two did.
"We dated one a while back," one of them said.
"We, as in..."
"Yes, my sister, Agatha, and me, Vlara. It's a pleasure."
"Right." She nodded again, feeling overwhelmed. Fighting and killing she could handle,
Weird situations with two sisters dating one guy, or walking in on foursomes, or whatever they called those, not so much.
Meet our guides,
Hadrian said, giving her a knowing glance.
Come, we must hurry.
The journey back seemed to take twice as long, likely because Samantha was so anxious to be done with the place. Arriving back at the ship, they were met by Jackal, who told them none of the others had returned yet. That didn't surprise Samantha, at least in regards to karma. Hadrian turned, looking back at the planet below, and quietly cursed.
Take note, Sam. As perfect of a team as you ever put together, they'll always have issues.
That was for sure. She nodded, then followed him as he made his way back out to go find the rest of the team. With a quick shout back at Jackal, he led the way while continuing to give orders, including to watch the guides and keep them on board.
What's your issue?
He asked.
I want to be ready for it, so I'm not surprised.
You mean like a weakness or vice? She thought about it. I guess I'm a little too eager to kill my enemies. Maybe that's ruthless. He nodded.
Maybe. Right now, though, that might be more of a strength.
She smiled as she said, Good. Napalm had fully intended to stay out of trouble, but when he was close to the planet, his mind started flashing back to images of the locals snickering as he walked past, completely naked. He had nothing to be ashamed of, but that didn't make it less humiliating. At first he had sat back, eyes closed, focusing on his breathing while he told himself to stay on the ship, go back to his room and sleep or train. But he just couldn't do it. He saw that bastard Faraway's toothless grin, the way he had poured that last glass of wine for Napalm. If only the woman hadn't been so beautiful. If only she hadn't leaned forward as she had, revealing her cleavage as she reached out and helped lift the glass. The wine had stung, his eyes already fuzzy from one too many. Then he'd had two too many, and then somehow they managed to get another in him. At that point, he couldn't tell which was the woman and which was Faraway. He had ended up in a hotel room, feeling hands undoing his belt, pulling at his pants, and then he was out, succumbed to the alcohol. As Napalm walked down the streets now, he glanced up at the tall, arched roofs over the walkways, pipes leading like metallic spiderwebs overhead. The scent of shit mixed with local drugs brought back the burning in his arms and chest, the craving to take Faraway's life. There was a way to his people. If they had a burning passion, they saw it through until all that was left was ash. Well, right now his passion said he had to kill that son of a bitch. He turned into a tall building at the end of a series of metal stairs and walkways, the lending house where his fortune had changed. The worst part was he hadn't even come there for himself, but to tell them to back off a friend of his. It was only after the fact that he had recalled seeing the woman there, and he wanted to punch himself for not making the connection earlier. He remembered the beating they gave his friend, the one he had come to this hellhole to help out, beat to an inch of his life, all because Napalm thought he could erase the debt. Though he was vaguely aware there could be repercussions against the crew for his actions here, he didn't care. All he cared about right now was releasing the fire.
Oh, shit!
A voice shouted, followed by the scuffling of someone running. It wasn't Faraway, but one of his men. Napalm gave chase, lifting his blaster rifle and sending two shots through the wall. Metal melted and gave him a view of the room beyond. The runner darted through a doorway that led to the room and joined three armed men, one of whom tossed him a pistol. They all turned on Napalm as he entered, fingers moving for triggers. Not gonna happen. With a shout and release of energy, the guns exploded, taking hands with them and leaving the men to collapse to the floor in agony. They each had the three rocks that showed they were Akame. To attack Akame in the neutral zone was punishable by death, since they couldn't hold your people responsible as many nations and planets did. Instead of leaving them to talk or do more harm to people he loved, Napalm walked past them and glared. He turned the middleman's wrist PC into an explosive device that took their heads and splattered Napalm in blood. He glanced down and then kept moving. Footsteps sounded upstairs, followed by someone making a call. Reinforcements would be here soon, and a voice in his head whispered that he should be gone by then. But he was too focused to heed its warning, like a fly's buzzing, one that you're mildly aware of, but too focused on the hornet's nest ahead to care. Instead of bothering with the stairs this time, he aimed up and shot, spinning in a circle until the floor dropped out, bringing one Akame with it. He quickly darted forward and took the man's weapon, then tossed it back up through the hole with a charge of his energy. He rolled and used the man as protection, as the explosion sent flames to cover both levels. Cries filled the building, and now he was up, darting past screaming, burning bodies of the Akame men and kicking in the door on the top floor. He had visited Faraway in this office before, and was pleased to see him standing there, coil rifle aimed at the door.
"You?"
the man said, eyes wide.
"Being a debt collector, I wanted to let you know,"
Napalm said, grinning.
"I owe you one."
Faraway frowned, cocked his head, and then fired. A shot of electricity blasted the door off its hinges, missing Napalm as he darted down and forward, as Dex had been showing him. He came up on the other side of the desk, grabbing Faraway and tackling him to the floor. Lifting his fists, he started raining them down on the man. It wasn't just his memory of the shame that drove him, but the look in the eyes of his friend's wife when she told him what had happened. She had blamed him, and he could never live that moment down. The best he could do was to ensure Faraway never had a chance to do that to another. As he struck, bursts of energy rained down too. Energy Hadrian had shown him how to manipulate, after he had taught Hadrian how to pull on it to begin with. The bursts of energy joined in the barrage of strikes, as if he had 100 arms all slamming the corrupt Akame man into the metal floor, until he was no more than a pile of blood and chunks of bone. Napalm fell back, breathing heavily, and looked down to see broken off chunks of the man's bone on his bloody knuckles. He listened to the sound of more men and women shouting, of someone screaming in the distance, and the flames from below starting to take whatever combustible material they could find in the metal building. Instead of moving, he just closed his eyes and focused on his friend.
"This was for you,"
he thought, and then a calm came over him. With a startle, he came back to reality, realizing what he had done. He hated it when the passion took over him like that, but now he was at ease in life, having finally put an end to this feeling that had been burning within himself for so long. What he didn't like, however, was that he was now out here, separated from his team, and had just earned the wrath of every Akame. It would only be a matter of time before a bounty was put out for him, if they knew who he was. In a place like this, that was tantamount to a death sentence. Sam and Hadrian had started with asking the locals if they had seen a man with fire eyes, as he would likely be the only one here of his kind. But when the gunshots and explosions started, they had a pretty good idea of where to look. Halfway to the building with flames blasting out near the top, they spotted Karma and the others running in the same direction.
She glanced over with wide eyes and shouted, "I think we found napalm."
"Next time,"
Hadrian shouted back,
"don't lose him."
"Noted," Karma replied. They halted as a hover truck came swinging around a side street, Akame men and women pouring out with guns at the ready.
"On it,"
Quan shouted, jumping to a building for cover and opening fire. This distracted the fighters long enough for Hadrian to use his force to throw their truck at them, and they dove for cover as the Shadow Corps members darted past them for the building. Dex took up the rear, making a quick pass to cut the weapons in half and kick the closest attacker back into the others. A figure appeared from a walkway above and dropped to the ground with a grunt. He turned, and Samantha saw those fiery eyes. It was Napalm.
"There!"
she shouted to Hadrian, pointing. Hadrian nodded and led the charge, his gold cloak billowing behind him. Dex darted through the shadows like one of them and reached Napalm's side a moment before the others. It was good timing, because three attackers appeared nearby with knives and pistols. Dex took out two of them before the third nearly caught Napalm. Samantha pulled out her sword and felled the last of them, glad to get some experience toward her next skill point.
"What have you done?"
Hadrian shouted, lifting Napalm off the ground with a wave of energy. Napalm glared, not answering, and finally Hadrian set him back down with a growl of annoyance. He motioned toward the ship, and they ran through the city, many of the residents figuring this group of running outsiders was likely responsible for the chaos and rushing to get out of their way. Two cruisers approached and opened fire, but a wave from Hadrian sent the first careening into a nearby building. A motion from Napalm made the next explode. They made it to the transports and were halfway to the ship before alarms sounded and display screens turned on, revealing a woman with short cropped hair and three purple stones in her forehead. She frowned at the sight of them, looking very put out.
"I wouldn't have expected this from you, Elder Hadrian."
Hadrian breathed deep, not looking at Napalm, and was about to answer when another screen lit up, cutting in on the conversation. There sat one of their new guides, with Jackal standing behind her.
"Lady Protector," the guide said, voice smooth with practice. "I trust you can accept our deepest apology. Please check your account to confirm."
The woman frowned, confused for a moment, then turned off screen. A moment later, her eyes widened and she turned back to them.
"All appears to be in order," she said, giving them a nod. "Carry on. But I might advise you all to stay away for some time."
"Noted,"
Hadrian stated.
"And thank you."
With a curt nod, the connection with her was broken, leaving just the one with the guide live.
"How much do I owe you for that little stunt?"
The guide smiled wide and said,
"We'll add it to the tab. Don't you worry about it."
At that, the connection went off as the transport reached its destination. Hadrian glanced at Samantha and said,
"Lesson of the day, her kind? You don't want to owe her kind."
With a sigh, he opened the door and motioned them all to move to the ship.
"The rest of you? We're going to have a long talk about the importance of the mission and what it means when you put your personal interests above the survival of the universe. For now, though, let's get the hell out of here."
Chapter 20. Hadrian's Ship, Training Room. They could still hear Hadrian and Napalm shouting at each other, even an hour later, all the way from the main training room. Samantha showed them the gifts she had gotten at the market, and Karma pointed out they could have been useful on planet when they were trying to get out of there without killing too many people.
I'm sure we'll have another situation arise at some point where stunning is preferred, Samantha argued.
Good point,
Quan said, taking his and slipping it into a spot on the thigh of his armor.
I'll never argue against free weapons.
Karma shrugged and took one as well. Dex had accepted a baton wordlessly, then gone over to retrieve a sword to start training. Samantha put the remaining baton in a bag and hung it by the swords, then joined Dex, trying to mimic the being's form. Karma and Quan moved into a sparring circle and were having a good go at each other when Quan hit her a bit too hard and started apologizing profusely in Korean. Sam noticed Karma seemed distracted during the fight and had kept looking over at Samantha. After assuring Quan it was her fault, not his, she stood in the corner and waved Samantha over.
What?
Samantha asked, spinning and then ducking as she had seen Dex do a moment before. With an exasperated sigh, Karma gestured towards the door. Being summoned like this wasn't one of Samantha's favorite things, but she nodded to Dex, replaced her sword, and followed Karma out. She was glad to hear the shouting from down the hall had quieted down.
About back there,
Karma started. Samantha's eyes went wide, trying not to let her memory flash back to what she had caught Karma doing with those two women and the man. She glanced around, wondering if walking away and ignoring this conversation would work out somehow.
Listen, okay?
Karma leaned in, closer than seemed natural.
It never leaves your mouth, right? I mean, this is a huge deal for me. If the women of my planet ever found out I was with a man, I'd be ostracized. It wasn't my fault, it was the devil's wine, right?
Listen, Karma.
No, just say you agree. Say you'll never tell anyone. Please?
Samantha nodded. Honestly, I'd prefer to forget all about it as quickly as possible.
You and me both, kid.
A weird look came into Karma's eyes, then a hint of a smile.
Ew!
Samantha took a step back.
You're remembering it right now, aren't you?
What? No. She tilted her head from side to side.
Well, maybe. I mean, have you ever been with two women and a man?
Samantha frowned, then promptly spun on her heel and walked off, back to training. To get that out of her head, she was going to have to go extra hard on the punching bags today. She was about to walk back into the training room when Hadrian called out for her. Trailing him was a worn-down-looking Napalm, along with the two guides they had picked up on planet.
Bring everyone to the mess hall,
he commanded.
Roger that,
she replied. She waved the others out and was soon following him to the mess hall. Hadrian gestured for the guide, Vuara, to step under the domed ceiling. She was about to speak when Hadrian lifted a hand and everyone turned to him.
Before we start, I trust you all learned a lesson today. In case you are confused about what that lesson is, it's that your personal shit will not get in the way of our mission. It could have cost us dearly back there, and someone could have gotten hurt. As is, I can't imagine we'll want to return there anytime soon. Remember, the universe and our survival are more important than...
He turned to Napalm with a glare.
More important than revenge and petty bullshit.
Napalm nodded, cleared his throat, and said,
I'd like to apologize to everyone. That was rash, stupid. It won't happen again.
With a grunt, Hadrian gave them all one last look, then motioned aside for the guides to speak. Vuara looked up at the dome above, smiled, and said,
You all got it fancy up here.
Hey, you're with us now,
Hadrian said, his mood much lighter now that he had gotten his frustration off his chest.
We have it fancy.
Vuara laughed with a humored glance over to Agatha, and then started.
You all are going to Zeus's mouth, or rather, we. Got it. But here's what we...
She froze, eyes on Dex. Apparently she hadn't seen the dark-robed figure there before. Agatha now saw Dex too and turned on Hadrian.
You said you were on the side of the Alliance, so what the hell is that thing doing here?
Watch it!
Samantha stepped forward, caught off guard by their reaction, as well as her own, but going with it.
Dex is one of us.
Agatha and Vuara both turned on her now, looking furious, but Hadrian stepped between them.
Does it matter?
He asked.
I thought you all were neutral.
Agatha spat on the floor.
That's what I think about neutrality and you if you're with them.
Hadrian looked at the spit on the floor with a hint of annoyance, but shook his head.
Dex is not with the rest of their kind anymore. We are with the Alliance, as is Dex.
Vuara and Agatha shared a doubtful look, but Vuara nodded at her sister.
If that's the case, we're willing to continue, but...
Keep that thing away from us.
Agatha finished the thought. They've done our people too much harm for us to be 100% okay with this. Samantha was about to say something again, when Dex held up a hand to her and made a calming sound. She got the picture, thinking of herself having to partner with the Syndicate and how that would affect her. Like the old days if a Jewish fighter suddenly found out a Nazi was fighting at her side. Yeah, she could understand.
Please, carry on,
Hadrian said. He glanced back at Dex and added,
My apologies.
Dex gave a bow, then stood back, leaning against the wall. With one more cautious glance toward Dex, Vuara said,
As I was about to say, the journey leads through the land of the Dexalitiotite. There, we'll have to leave the ships behind.
Hadrian nodded, then motioned to the dome above. Light flooded it, silvery swirling wisps, and then cleared to show a planet covered in tunnel entrances.
That's impressive, Vuara said, assessing the planet.
Samantha noted a hiss from Dex, who clearly wasn't pleased to see the old planet.
Yes, you need us,
Vuara argued whatever Dex had said.
Because we know where this particular tunnel is.
That's not possible,
Karma argued.
How?
You see, Vuara said, we were both born into slavery in the Olympus Prime. We made it out, spent way too long traveling the tunnels of the Dexalitiotite, and lost the majority of our friends out there. Some of us escaped, and only the two of us are stupid enough to return.
Because we believe in your cause,
Agatha chimed in.
Because we're not neutral in the slightest. If we get to help you kill Dexalitiotites and fight the slavers, then consider us part of the team for the time being.
Dex made a sound, and Karma interpreted.
Dex is on board, and wants to challenge the two of you.
Another sound from Dex.
Sorry, Karma said, then added, No, challenge everyone here. Whoever kills the most Dexalitiotites will be awarded a cloak. Dex here will personally pair it to you. A collective gasp rose up from the two guides and Napalm, and even Hadrian looked surprised.
Am I the only one who doesn't understand what that really means?
Samantha asked.
The cloaks are a large source of their power,
Hadrian explained.
But they don't truly reach their maximum effect without pairing by a Dexalitiotite. If that happens, the wearer gains much of their powers, including the ability to nearly become one with the shadows. You've seen the way this bastard moves?
Napalm said with a nod to Dex.
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing when I win this challenge,
Agatha laughed. We'll see about that. She turned to Dex with a frown, but then smiled. I'm starting to like you, O great betrayer of evil. A strange sound came from Dex, and Samantha's best bet was that it was laughter.
The briefing, if you will,
Hadrian said, motioning back up to the image of the tunneled planet. Right. Vuara put her hands behind her back, looking up at the planet. Once we're in, you must stay close and never stop moving. We stop, we're dead. We have to turn back once, we get lost, and then we're dead. And the man you're after? Agatha added, cautiously turning to Hadrian. I trust you know?
I've been briefed,
Hadrian replied.
I know who he is. I know him very well.
She nodded. We were worried you weren't aware, that you'd change your mind once you learned.
Never. The Alliance takes precedence over all personal matters.
Well then, you should know the rumors we've heard. He and his have been hitting the Alliance hard. This isn't just some random bad guy doing bad things. This is one of yours who has lost his damn mind. Agatha shook her head, reaching up and moving her hands so that the image changed. First it showed a darkness, then burst forth into flames, a planet exploding, spaceships torn to shreds. Finally, one of the space dragons, and then a face. But the eyes were staring at them. Suddenly a piercing pain hit Samantha, and she heard the others yelp in surprise. Hadrian leaped forward and thrust his hands up, blocking the pain and closing out the image so that only the dome remained. When he turned back to face the room, his eyes were wide and full of worry. That's what we're up against, Agatha warned, turning to make eye contact with each of them. I hope you all know what you're getting into, because we're going all the way. If we get partway there and you chicken out, that's your life, forfeit.
That won't happen, Samantha promised. Everyone here is fully committed.
A moment of silence followed, interrupted by Jackal's voice coming through the ship's system.
Hadrian, Ferder is requesting comms. Should I put him through?
Hadrian held a finger to his ear and said,
Connect him to the mess hall.
A moment later, the dome cleared, and a hologram of Ferder's blue face appeared. He smiled at them, though the smile didn't reach his eyes.
We're approaching the jump, and here's the thing. We were to escort you this far, then return. However, I'd like to come with you.
All of us would.
Olive's voice came from behind him.
We don't mean to sit back while you get all the action.
Your team lead,
Hadrian said, turning to Samantha.
What do you say?
She was confused, shaking her head.
There's no way you can come with us?
He sighed.
Karstrak won't be able to sense you all coming, but he would sense me. The moment he knows I've crossed over, he'll be on the run, and we might lose our chance. If we hope to have any chance of taking him down, I cannot.
She nodded, thinking of the way Ferder and the others had moved back on the cliffs. With skills like that?
If you won't be here, I say we take all the help we can get.
Hadrian nodded, then turned back to the hologram.
I want one of you to take the ship back to the Elders. Give them an update. The rest may accompany my team, but with Samantha as the team lead. Got it?
Ferder nodded, but had a troubled look.
The ship takes two to operate. Olive and I will accompany you.
There was arguing behind him, but he turned to give the others a few words, followed by silence. When he looked back at the display, he added,
We'll dock up with you here then, and send the ship back. Understood,
Hadrian replied. He touched his finger to his ear again and said,
Jekyll, prepare for boarding.
Roger that,
Jackal's voice replied, and a moment later the hologram vanished.
Well, this is quite the little group we'll have here, Agatha said, giving a low whistle. Let's hope half of us make it out of there alive.
None of that bullshit, Samantha said. Not while I'm team lead.
Agatha frowned and looked to Hadrian, but he only nodded and said,
She's right, and with this team, I've already given my order. Nobody is to be hurt, and certainly not killed. I don't take kindly to anyone failing to follow my orders.
Understood, Vuara said, stepping up next to her sister. It's going to be tough, but we'll do our best to see your orders followed.
If it wasn't going to be a tough mission,
he replied,
we could have found some other less badass team to get it done.
Damn straight, Samantha added with a smile of confidence. Nobody messes with the Shadow Corps.
Her team replied with an oorah that startled the sisters. Then they smiled and replied back with their own oorah, followed by cheers and laughter. Was Samantha scared? Based on everything she had just heard, she would have to be an idiot not to be. But if she was going to walk right into hell and demand the devil's life, she was damn glad to have this team at her side. Chapter 21. Hadrian's Ship, Approaching Zeus's Mouth. Having Furter and Olive on board didn't make the ship crowded, as it had plenty of space, but it certainly made the dynamics more difficult to deal with. For one, Samantha wasn't sure if Olive had really taken to her yet. The woman eyed her with contempt more than once, always turning away quickly when caught. If she and Furter had something going on, there was no reason to think Samantha would get in the way of it. She considered cornering her somewhere to make this clear, but then thought better of it. Whatever was bothering the woman, she could figure it out herself. Samantha didn't want to make things awkward by bringing up something that may be way off its mark. The other ship had already headed back, while Hadrian and his crew planned how to get the Shadow Corps team on planet and then get out of there, only providing cover fire from the air. Hadrian had told them to contact him through the HUD devices if things got too hairy. He would come knocking down doors until he found them.
Mission be damned,
he told Samantha as she stood with him, watching their descent.
Without you, there is no mission. If it gets to that, we'll just have to find another way.
I won't let it get to that, she replied.
He nodded.
I know.
As he took command, directing Jackal where to touch down, Samantha took her leave to return to her room and mentally prepare. The planet wasn't as grand as the others she had seen, resembling a gigantic meteor with swirling darkness over patches. This was just another mission, she told herself. It was like freeing the work camps back on Earth, or going after a particular syndicate general. Nothing new here. Except that it was all new. All completely outside of her comfort bubble. Furter emerged from his room and started walking toward her, head down, but he perked up when he noticed her. She stopped at her doorway, halfway in, when he said,
Hey, Sam!
Jogging over the rest of the way.
Furter?
She replied with a curt nod, glancing up and down the hallways.
Where's Olive?
Training, I think. Maybe hitting the showers at this point?
He stepped in, as if that was totally normal, and then leaned up against her desk, almost sitting on it.
This is crazy, right? I mean, did you have any idea you'd be doing this when you met us?
She thought about it, then said,
Yeah, actually. Maybe not this exactly, but I left a lot to be out here. It damn well better be an important mission, or I might as well go home.
What's it like? Your home, I mean.
She ran her tongue across her bottom lip, thinking about that.
Different, very different than how it used to be. And nothing like all this, well, the fighting, as sad as it is to say, makes me feel right at home. He smiled.
It's not all fighting, though, right?
Excuse me? He chuckled, then bit his lip, fidgeting with his hands.
I was back there when you saw Karma.
She shook her head, confused, then put a hand to her mouth.
You mean you saw, too?
He nodded, trying to hide his smile.
Is that like back home?
Hell no. I mean, maybe for some people, but it's nothing like I'd know anything about. As if there's time between all the shooting and running for your life. For a moment, he just stared at her, and she was about to ask him to leave when he said,
We have time now. Not much, but...
He took a step toward her as he slid out of his jacket, a craving in his eyes.
Oh, God, no!
She moved around him, pointing to the door.
I mean, no offense, but you have the wrong idea here.
He frowned, then shook his head.
I've noticed the way you look at me. You can't say you're not curious.
With that, he started to undo his pants.
Let me quell your curiosity.
That was it. She couldn't take this. Not right now. She quickly pushed him out into the hall and turned to retreat to her room when she noticed someone else there. Olive. She stared at the two of them, and only then did Samantha realize the action of shoving Furter out had made his pants fall down. Apparently, their kind didn't wear undergarments.